sit here. I'm kind of getting over a cold.
Okay. Today, we're learning Perek Lamed Zayin of the Netzach Yisrael. And this Perek is it's entitled Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. It's about the two Mashiachim, the two anointed ones, literally, that's what Mashiach means. The two kings, leaders that we recognize will exist within the Jewish people in the ultimate coming of the Mashiach. And, you know, it's about the times and the situation surrounding the end of days, Milchemes Goig u'Magog, you know, what the others call Armageddon, you know, the ultimate battle, which is prophesied in Sefer Yecheskel. And, you know, very generally, I think, generally a fairly cloudy subject, you know that's there. So we're going to learn about this. And while we're not going to be so much focusing in on the details in this parak of Goig u'Magog, he talks about it a little bit more elsewhere, but the duality of Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David he's going to teach about, and I think it's a great time for us to learn about it. Hopefully it's a great time to learn about it because he's waiting around the corner, but year-wise it's a great time to learn about it because really this division of Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David is very much to the core of what we're reading about these days in the Parshios, you know, as we're seeing the development of the Jewish people in its branches. The pasuk says regarding Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, that Actually, I was looking for a tea.
Your hot water is right there, but I thought you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, no problem. Thank you.
By the end of the year, it should be down. Okay. Okay. Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. Again, so we have this, these two that we have to that we deal with. So let's just begin before we get to the actual Mashiach ben Yosef notion. Let's understand the situation, the way it's described, the Milchemes Goig u'Magog. Exactly at what stage and at what point this is to occur, you know, is a little bit of an issue, a little bit of a question. And Maharal's approach is that and this is a mainstream approach, is that Milchemes Goig u'Magog takes place as Mashiach comes in the beginning of the times of the Mashiach, before the completion of the process. Obviously, once the process is completed, so then, you know, there are no more of these wars, there are no more of these challenges. But it is there in the beginning. In the second psalm, right? Lama rok shugayim, ulumi mihegurik, isyatsu malchayeretz, v'reizdim reizdu yachad, right? Al Hashem v'yal Mashiachai. It says they all get up and they're all getting ready to fight against Hashem and his Mashiach. Literally means his anointed one. We understand that that's referring to Milchemes Goig u'Magog. That's referring to that battle of Goig u'Magog. And as the Maharal is magdir it, as the Maharal defines it, you know, this is the stage of Moshiach where the nations are still there. They haven't been quashed yet. It's their last fight. The Moshiach is emerging, and yet the nations are still there to have strength. So the Goig u'Magog, this battle is the battle to make them no longer a significant factor, to have the Mashiach rule without challenge at this point, without acknowledgement. Since he has not yet reached his ultimate stage, so that's why we have this challenge and we have this fight which occurs at that point in time. Okay, so what happens there? So what he's going to be focusing on in the Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David realm is the what the Gemara says in Maseches Sukkah. The Gemara says in Maseches Sukkah, it refers to a pasuk in Zechariah, which speaks about a eulogy, the Safta Oretz, where the land will eulogize, will mourn, Mishpachais, Mishpachais, Levad, right, families, families themselves, So the Gemara says, who is this hesped for? Hai hespeda mai aviditei. What is this hesped for? Pligi bo Rabbi Daisa v'Rabbanan. It's a machlekes between Rabbi Daisa and Rabbanan. Chadamar, one of them says, al Mashiach ben Yosef shenerag. One says that it's a eulogizing, it's mourning over the Mashiach of Yosef who will be killed. V'chadamar, and the other one says, no, it's al Yetzer Hara. It's on the Yetzer Hara shenerag, where the Yetzer Hara gets killed. One says it's Mashiach ben Yosef that gets killed, and the other one says it's the Yetzer Hara that gets killed. And the Gemara gets into a discussion. Well, we can understand why they would be upset about why the Mashiach ben Yosef dies. Why exactly would they be so upset about the Yetzer Hara dying? Right? That sounds like something which is good. And the Gemara gets into a discussion about when the people see the Yetzer Hara dying, so then all the pain that the Yetzer Hara caused them, right? The tzaddikim say, "Oh my gosh, right? He was so great. How were we able to overcome him?" And so on and so forth. But these are the two opinions that exist over there in the Gemara about who this is. And it's interesting to interpret the same possible crying either on Mashiach ben Yosef or on the Yetzer Hara. Again, which again speaks to Gemara's question. Why are we being upset about the Yetzer Hara? We can understand why it is about Mashiach ben Yosef. The Gemara goes on and makes another little comment, and the Gemara says, also implying the same notion of a Mashiach ben Yosef that gets killed. This is really what we're going to be talking about here to some degree, the difference between the two of them, and why one of them ends and one of them doesn't end. But the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Mashiach ben David she'asig ligoz meher v'yameinu aymer le'akadosh baruch hu she'al mimeni davar ve'atein lach. Mashiach ben David, Hashem says to him, ask me something and I'll grant it to you. She'al mimeni ve'atein lach, and I'll give it to you. By the way, who was the first person who was given that choice? Shlomo ben David, right? King Shlomo, right? Hashem said, ask me what you want. Tell me whatever you want, right? Remember? And he asked for wisdom, right? So Hashem does that to the Mashiach ben David as well. And Ben David. So he says, Shenemar, as it says, Tzaprel, Chayk, Ani Ayim L'ticha, Shalmi Meni, Ve'etna Goyim Nachalosecha. Ask of me. This is, in fact, in the context of Milchemes Gog U'Magog. It's in the same second psalm. Ask of me, and I'll give Goyim your portion. The Kivan Shiroah Mashiach ben Yosef Shenerag. But when Mashiach ben David sees that his immediate predecessor, Mashiach ben Yosef, or partner, got killed, Omer he says before him, Rabbeinu Shalom, Eini Mivakash Mecha Lachayim. Rabbeinu Shalom, I want nothing fancy. Just don't let me die, right? Let me live, right? I see he died. You know, you're gonna ask me. I had my eye on a jaguar. You know, but you know, we'll leave that aside. Just let me live. So he says, "Imer lechayim actually amarta kvar yisnav elecha David avicha shnemer chayim shal mimecha nasat le'erech yomim elavoed." David HaMelech already said, "Don't worry, you're secure as far as that goes. That's not something that you have to concern yourself with." Okay, so two Gemaras together on the same page, Sukkah Daf and Beis Amud Aleph, both of them speaking about the death of Mashiach and Yosef, right? One of them saying, well, but Mashiach ben David need not worry about that. It applies to Mashiach ben Yosef, it doesn't apply to Mashiach ben David. So let's take a step back from this Gemara. Let's take a step back from the apocalyptic elements of this issue, of this discussion. And let's just look at Yosef David, at these two Mashiachim, these two kings, and their role. The truth is that as we have discussed before, you know, there was a divided kingdom in the Jewish people from the time of Rechavam, the son of Shlomo. Remember that there was a breakaway, that there was a tax revolt against Rechavam. There was a tax revolt against Rechavam. If nobody sits at the table and everybody sits in the back, I'm going to go crazy. Come. So Rechavam says that Rechavam wanted to succeed his son, did succeed his son Shlomo. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already told Shlomo HaMelech that, okay, some of the details are not going to seem immediately relevant, okay? So just, I'm telling you this story because they're going to become relevant as we go along here. Right, so Hashem had told Shlomo HaMelech that his kingdom would split. Hashem had told Shlomo HaMelech that his kingdom would split, would break apart because of failings of his own. So the Gemara says that, so the Pasuk says that, how did it end up happening? What happened was, you know, Shlomo HaMelech was a great, great builder. He built palaces, he built the Beis HaMikdash. He was very, very involved in diplomacy. It was expensive, and it made great demands upon the people. And when Shlomo HaMelech died, the people came to Rechavam, led by a gentleman named Yeravam ben Avot, who was from Menasha. And he said, you know, your father was very, very tough on us, right? We need a break. We need a break. Ease up. And what happened was that Rechavam said, let me think about it. And he turned to his advisors. First he turned to his old, sage, experienced advisors, you know, the fellows from the previous Clinton administration. And he went to them and he said, what should we do? And they said, it's a good idea to listen to them, because, look, you may lose a few bucks in tax revenue in the short term, but ultimately you'll gain their confidence, you'll gain their trust. It's a good thing. Then he went to his young advisors, right, the change people. And he went to them and he said, what do you think we should do? And they said, you cannot do that. You've got to assert yourself. Right? They think, now Shlomo HaMelech is gone, now we're going to walk all over this guy. So you have to show them who's boss. So you have to tell them a thing or two. And Rechavam, Me'ez Hashem, the Pasuk says, it came from Hashem because Hashem wanted the kingdom to split. He had Rechavam listen to the very bad advice of the younger ones. And Rechavam called them in, and they came back and he said, you ain't seen nothing yet. Right? If you think in my father's day it was tough, right? Wait till I take over and I get my hand at the tax code. Right? You ain't seen nothing yet. And so what happened was that Yeravam led a significant group, 10 out of 12 tribes of the Bnei Yisrael, broke away. They were not willing to accept this. And it broke into two kingdoms. So that we would see to some degree as the emergence of two kingdoms in the Jewish people. One of them led by Yehuda, right, a descendant of David HaMelech, and the other one led by Menashe, by Yosef. But of course that's not the first time. Because as we're about to start reading in the Torah, this week we learned about the birth of the Shiftei Kah, of the various Shvatim, the various tribes. As we go along in this story, right, next week's Parsha is not going to be too much focused on specific tribes, except maybe, in Shimon and Levi, but when we get to Vayeshev and we get into the real intrigue amongst the Shvatim, so what's that? Who are the principal characters in that? There's Yosef, of course, who gets sold to Mitzrayim, and there's Yehuda, who was the one who ultimately counseled that they sell him to Mitzrayim. And the Torah, as you see it, it really presents two parallel narratives in that parsha. You know what Parshas Vayeshev is made up of? It starts off with the sale of Yosef. It ends off with Yosef's career in Mitzrayim, the butler, the baker, that stuff. And in the middle of it, we have the story of Yehuda and Tamar. Those are the two themes, right? Yehuda and Tamar in the middle. And it's understood, right, why did Yehuda somehow fall away from his brothers? Because they were upset at him, that when they saw what the sale of Yosef did, so they were a little bit disappointed. But the story of Yehuda and Tamar is not just a story of Yehuda's disappointment. The story of Yehuda and Tamar is also the story in which Yehuda emerges as a leader. Yehuda, ata yeiducha achecha. Yehuda, your brothers will acknowledge you, right? So what is that? What is that? So as the Targum says there, at odesa v'loy v'hisisa, you admitted and you weren't afraid, you weren't ashamed. When Tamar said, whoever these are belonging to, that's who it is, right? Yehuda hayda v'loy bay, she admitted it and he came forth and he fessed up. It was not an issue, and then his brothers acknowledged him. That's when Yehuda emerged as a leader, as a gever be'echav. And of course, in the story of Yosef being sold down to Mitzrayim, what does Yosef emerge as? He emerges as the fate-ordained leader, as the fate-ordained leader of the people. It was his original vision, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu had given him, that everybody would be coming and bowing down to him. So you have two leaders whose stories are developing, intertwined with each other, side by side. And of course, its climax is when Yosef is there in Mitzrayim, and the Jews have to go down to Mitzrayim, and they get to the end point, and Binyamin, if without Binyamin not doing anything, and Yaakov's hesitant, Reuven steps forward, ignored, Yehuda steps forward, and he says to his father, the buck stops with me. I'll take responsibility to bring him back. And Yehuda is therefore given Binyamin. And Yehuda is the one who ends up therefore confronting Yosef. Vayigashel of Yehuda. Right? And as the Medrash says, these were the two kings facing each other down. So we have two kings in the Jewish people. We have Yehuda and Yosef. from the genesis of the Shifteicha, we have them emerging as two leaders, two kings of the Jewish people. In Jewish history, that has already been experienced, we have them as the two leaders, rival leaders within the Jewish people, when the kingdom of Klal Yisrael split into two. And in the ultimate period of reconciliation, in the time of the end of days, we have Mashiach, the king, the anointed one, Ben Yosef, and we have Mashiach Ben David. We have them both. And Mashiach Ben Yosef, in the end of days, is a bridge to Mashiach Ben David. He's the one who dies. Mashiach Ben David lasts long term. It certainly fits with the middle point, with the Rechavam Yeravam story, where we understand that the main king was David HaMelech and his descendants, Shlomo, Rechavam, right? And then, sort of, this was like a breakaway. So instead of leading to the kingdom of David HaMelech, right, which parenthetically also happened with a full brother of Yosef, who was the king before David HaMelech, was Shaul ben Kish, who was from Binyamin, right? Not quite Yosef. Not exactly Yosef, but also from that strand of the family. We'll try again to address it and deal with it a little bit more later. But here again, the kingdom of Yisrael, you understand, as being sort of an offshoot, not the main show, not the center stage of it. Again, Mashiach ben Yosef to Mashiach ben David, and in a great sense, David is from Yehuda. David is from Peretz, from Boaz, from Yehuda's twins, from the actually born, the twins born from Yehuda and Tamar. And and in the first one, so we can look at it a little, we say, well, Yosef was the king of the Jews, well, sort of, he was really actually the king of the Egyptians, right? He was the king of the Egyptians, and as the king of the Egyptians, right, and the Jews ended up having to seem to be to subordinate to the Egyptians, so he ended up being the king of the Jews. They came to bow down to him. He wasn't really, right, you would say, as the natural internal king of the Jews. So there's this relationship which exists between the two of them. And we have to understand it. We have to understand the nature of the relationship, the comparison, the contrast which exists between these two. So the Maharal provides the conceptual framework to this. A delicious, elegant, beautiful conceptual framework, which is going to take me exactly 1 minute to say. Right? And then we have to understand it. But he says the Jewish people, as we know, is like a body. It's like one entity. A human body. A single entity, right? Remember what I told you, some of you were here in Shul last week for Meir Shapiro's incredible word on Adam Atem, right? When the Jewish people are called Adam, right, the rest of the world, the nations of the world are not called Adam, right? So I'm sorry, I'm going to repeat it for those who weren't here because it's a word to remember, and also because it wasn't taped on Shabbos. But the Rameir Shapira in 1914, when there was the trial of Mendel Bayless, who was accused of literally of ritual sacrifice for Korban Pesach, for matzahs, right, a blood libel. So it was a major thing, and they were putting Judaism on trial. And the chief rabbi of Moscow, Rabbi Yaakov Maza, was defending Judaism, and they were preparing him. Many gedolim he was consulting with them. They're going to argue this, to prove this from the Talmud, that from the Talmud. So Rabbi Meir Shapira, who was then all of 27 years old, sent him a letter. And he said, they're going to say, the Gemara says that Goyim are not human. Because it says, you are called Adam. The Goyim are not called Adam. Right? The din of Adam ki yamus ba'oel. Right? The person who dies in the tent, at the whole time of his time, he say, Goyim are not human. He said, of course you can kill us. You feel you can kill us. Because you don't consider us as human beings. So he says, no, you have to explain to them what the Gemara means. What the Gemara means is like this. That there are various terms for people. Right? There's Ish, there's Enosh, there's Adam. Ish has a plural, Ishim. Right? Not used so commonly. Enosh has a plural which is used very commonly called Anoshim. What's the plural of Adam? There is no plural of Adam. And if you think back to the original Adam was man or mankind. Right? Adam in Gan Eden, right? So it was a fellow named Adam, Or was it mankind? What he did was the whole fate of mankind. Chazal tell it us in their terms that in the neshama of Adam was kol, was included the neshamas of everybody. He was mankind in one body. So Rameh Shapiro said, says, tell them. It says, Mendel Bayless is being tried for ritual murder in Russia. Jews in Russia are concerned. Jews in Hungary are concerned. Jews in Poland are concerned. Jews in America are concerned. The whole Jewish world, their heart is beating together with that of Mendel Bayless. It says if a Ukrainian was on trial, so his family would be concerned. Maybe his neighbor would be concerned. Maybe his town would be concerned. You know, Ukrainians, who knows where? You know, Klal Yisrael is Adam, is man. That we're there in the singular. We're one entity. We're one entity. We're not saying you're subhuman. Just in the Jewish people, there is this commitment to each other that they view themselves as an organic whole, as one entity. It's a right magnificent, very, very important fact. However, right, it's one which we find many, many elements, you know, of it are expressed in different places in Chazal. And the way the Maharal expresses it is like this: that when we look at the 12 Shvatim, we look at it as 12 limbs of one total entity. Again, something which is found in many places. 12 limbs of one whole. But when you look at the various limbs of the body, there are two limbs that control. Did I say this was going to take me exactly 1 minute? It's 1 minute starts now. I wasn't counting on our Meir Shapira. Okay, there are 12 limbs. But of those 12 limbs, there are two limbs within the body of the person that can be said to govern, to rule over the whole body. And what are they? They are the head and the heart. Right? The head and the heart. You might say the brain and the heart. Right? Those two. Now, again, of course, a person can't function without liver function, without kidney function, but nobody says that when there's a loss of liver function, you know, like that's the definition of death. You know, the human being, the liver has an important, you know, laundering, filtering function, you know, in order to make things work through the system. But the heart is what sends life throughout the body. The brain is going to be, you know, that active, that's ground zero of decision making. Those are the two. Says the Maharal, in the body of the Jewish people, there's a head, and that's Yehuda, and there's a heart, and that's Yosef. That's the structural form. So they both, in a certain realm, are kings. There's the head, which is Yehuda, and there's the heart, which is Yosef. Illustration, Yehuda, mi baraysh, right? The pasuk says, mi alalanu, right? Betchila mi baraysh, Yehuda was the one who went first. Right? The language of the pasuk is actually mi baraysh. There's a language, and I got it till we say that, but let me just say it. Right? Yehuda yala baraysh, right? The language of the pasuk is, mi alalanu betchila, who's going to go first to battle? And it says, Yehuda will go first, baraysh, in the head. You know that the camps of the Jewish people, there were four camps, right? There was Yehuda's camp, right? Was together with Yisachar and Zevulun. Okay, thank you. There was Reuven's camp, which was Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. They went second, and then there was Ephraim's camp, which was Menashe, Ephraim, and Binyamin, all the children of Rachel, right? And then there was Asher, Dan, Naphtali, right? Adam. Right? I learned it, if you ever want to remember it, I don't know how few can remember this, but I was taught this when I was a child, that's why I can always remember it. It's Yizi Gorash Mayav Adon. Okay? That's the way to remember it. Yizi Gorash Mayav Adon. Yehuda Yisachar, whatever it is. It's pretty easy to remember. But the Yehuda went first, and Ephraim, Yosef, went in the middle. Right? The head is, of course, at the top, and the heart is in the middle to a certain degree. Right, the heart is in the center of things. You might argue, okay, I don't know, there's less space from the top of the body to the bottom, but you know the symmetry, the notion of the heart being in the middle, is extremely critical even in heart function. You know that very, very much. It's a physiological reality that if a person, let's say, le'olein rachmona litzlan, is an amputee on one side, right, it causes major circulatory problems on the other side as well. Right, very often, if it's going to be on one side, it's an eventuality that the other side is going to come off too. Because when the system is imbalanced, it's a difficulty. The heart is fundamentally in the middle. Right, the Yosef's position in the camps of the Jewish people was in the middle. Yehuda was at the head. Okay, great. So that's our structural framework, the head and the heart. And now, we need to figure, what's the difference in leadership, in the type of kingdom the type of personality that would be represented by the head, and what would be that is represented by the heart? What's the difference between the mayach, between the head and the heart? You know, the jokers like to say as follows. You know, chassidim were a gartel. It's based really on a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, in the Gemara, that when a person davens, there has to be a separation between their heart and their reproductive organs. Right? There has to be some kind of a mafsik, some kind of a separation there. So they say, litvaks, they also wear a gartel. It's a tie. It's to separate between their head and their heart. Right? They don't want any connection there, heaven forbid. Right? So, it's a good one, no? Yeah. Okay. But there's a lot of significant truth to, I'm not talking about, you know, the teasing of the litvaks, right? But there's a lot of a significant truth to the halachic concern and to the halachic non-concern. You see, when we would view those three sections, so to speak, of the body, so the head, you know, the head is intellect. The head is, you know, doing what is right, doing that which is correct. You know, it's a nice thought, you know, if sometimes we would actually fall, but that's the idea, right? You know, a human being specifically, right, he's a bal kaima, he stands on two legs, right? The Medrash says, right, the head is supposed to rule, the head is supposed to reign supreme. That's what's unique quality amongst a human being. We share so much with the others, but by us, right, the Reish, the head is supposed to rule. Right, the intellect is the pure, objective clarity that's supposed to be there. The reproductive organs, right, the midsection of the person, there, if anything, we see that as the opposite. The most fundamental, basic physical drive that we would describe. When man sinned originally, he sinned by eating something, right? But it translated itself into the exposure, so to speak, and literally of the reproductive organs as oh boy, this is not, you know, this is now going to be an issue, a problem. It's the most base drive potentially. Again, our job is to sanctify it, to consecrate it, to make it better. We have the bris milah that establishes our connection with Hashem going specifically there, because naturally it is the greatest source of taiva, of desire, and therefore of pulling away from the objective, non-self-serving, perfect.
Wasn't it driven by the Nachash's desire for intimacy?
Right, and that's what Chazal see as the subtext of the story, that there wasn't just an eating of an apple, but there was actually an intimate, animalistic encounter that took place, that the snake wanted to relate to man, which is going to be a very base mating relationship, rather than what man is supposed to have, which is supposed to be a much stronger, higher, loftier kind of connection and relationship. The heart is between those two sections. The heart is between those two sections. It's between passion and mind. And the way we talk about the heart, you know, sometimes people today, especially, you know, with a good medical training, you know, we laugh at the characterizations of the heart that are found in the Tanakh. People laugh at it. You know, the heart is a muscle that pumps and pumps and pumps and pumps and pumps, right? That's what it is, right? But when we speak about our heart, when Hallmark speaks about the heart, you know, when Lahavdil the Chumash or the Torah speaks about the heart, right? What do we see in the heart? We speak about it certainly as feelings, right? You know, set the heart aflutter. Right, but you know, it also is sort of like, you know, like instinct. You know, my heart tells me. What's the term for according to in the Gemara? Aliba demanda amar, right? Which is on the heart of, with the heart of the one who said this, with the heart of the one who said that. Yeah, because where there's an argument, there's different perspectives. In pure intellectual objectivity, there is no different perspective. However, when it's intellectual objectivity seated within a human being with very much subjective personality as well, those two together come up with an opinion which is best described as emanating from the heart of the person. The heart, in a great sense, is the point of intersection between the guf's desires and the intellect, and the intellectual, the detached, the special role of the head. Huh? B'chalavavcha, exactly. B'shnei Yitzrecha, the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. Right? Before that, there was nothing. There was just the Yetzer Tov. Right? In a certain sense, there was the head. There was the head. Right? And now we introduce the loins. And now the heart is the combination of the two of them. Of the, right? Somehow the two of them. And you know, that's life. How many times have we talked about that? That's going to be the main challenge of life. That's the Yetzer Tov. The Yetzer Hara is negotiating the relationship between our minds and our bodies. Mind versus matter. Tzura versus Chomer. Intellect, purity, soul versus body. This is where it all is. Now, not Yehuda, not Yosef are represented by the loins. Okay? One might say that it's possible for a person to see themselves as being completely driven by desire.
Well, they both had challenges in that area.
They both had challenges in that area, different challenges in that area. Exactly right. Yehuda and Tamar, Yosef and Eshes Potiphar. Right? We're going to come to that. But nobody's going to be represented by the loins purely. Right? It may govern in certain things that are out there. In Yisrael, that's certainly not going to be the case. Right? The heart has a potential to govern. The head has a potential to govern. Now, so what does that give us? What does that tell us? To a great degree, what it tells us is that Yehuda is supposed to be, in that sense, this sort of perfect, objective melech. And Yosef is supposed to be somewhat, you know, down there in the terms of the physical world, but nevertheless, to some degree, refining it to be able to be melech. Now, that broad distinction is of very, very, very broad application and of significant application.
Is that why Yosef keeps going down into the trenches? Down
okay,
the pit?
Absolutely. Well, the pit, maybe you would say to some degree figuratively, but Yosef becomes the king in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is physicality. Mitzrayim is shtufei zima, right? They're overwhelmed by physicality. Right? They're so drenched in it, stuck in it. Yosef is ruling over there.
He cried when he's over, right? Emotive.
Okay, very good. Right? He cried. We'll see. Okay. The crying is rather, it's a twist, but it's an aspect, but it's a,
right.
Remember Leah, who's the mother of Yehuda, was a professional soft-eyed crier, right? She was always, she was the one who was crying chronically for a time. Right? Eventually, that switched. So it's a little more complex. But, you know, one can point that in. But right, this is the difference that we find. So, you know, Yosef is there in Mitzrayim. Right? Is Yosef detached from physicality? Remember, right? One thing which incriminated Yosef was he was misalthil b'sarai, right? You know, he was making himself look nice, right? Something which we don't necessarily find by Yehuda, right? Even though there is a notion that every king is supposed to look beautiful, but, you know, one, that's part of why Yosef was, to a great degree, taken to task. Yosef, remember that we have these two career choices in the early days for Jewish people, for people in the world, before there was such a thing as lawyers and doctors, right? What were the two career choices?
Shepherds
or farmers, right? Cain and Hevel, right? Cain was a farmer and Hevel was a shepherd. Cain had no hesitation to attach himself to the accursed land. Hevel said, the land was cursed by the sin. I want to have nothing to do with it. I'll be a shepherd. I'm going to work with the sheep, the animals that are still deferring to human beings. Right? Two different things. And generally speaking, when you think about what the Jews did, they were shepherds, right? Avram was a shepherd. Yitzchak was sort of a shepherd. Yaakov was certainly a shepherd, right? Yaakov's sons were all shepherds. That's why the Egyptians couldn't handle them, right? But Yosef was the chief farmer of the entire land of Egypt, right? Remember? And that was the unusual nature of Yosef's dream. Could you imagine? Right? Yosef was Rayeh Esachov Batzoin, the Pasuk says. He was shepherding the sheep together with his brothers. That's the beginning of the story of Ayeshev. And he's shepherding the sheep with his brothers. That's what he does. And he has a dream. What is his dream? No, not that dream. He has a different dream, right? And his dream is that the brothers are all bundling sheaves in the fields, and all of their bundles come and bow down to his bundles. What? Right? What, why do you say we were all shearing our lambs, right? And all of your clumps of wool came and bow down to my clumps of wool. That would have been a more normal, you know, Freudian continuum that you would have had over here. However, Yosef was anticipating, right, as Pashat Pshat. I mean, Pashat Pshat is, as Ramban says, Pashat Pshat in the dream was that when would they all come down to bow down to him? With a need for sheaves, right? With a need for grain, for produce. That was what they came for. So Yosef was becoming the ultimate farmer. He lived in the capital of Egypt, and they were shepherds. So Yosef is, like Cain, Lahavdil, entering the world of physicality, right? But Yosef is doing it as Yosef HaTzadik, right? He's doing it well. Okay. Yehuda is a shepherd, right? The whole story of Yehuda and Tamar takes place around Yehuda being a shepherd, right? He went al geizes etzina. He went to shear his sheep, right? That's where it happened. That's where how he met Tamar. He was, doing his shearing thing. Okay, so you know this difference. You see it in Yosef in so many ways. This physicality. The roots of it, quickly, are Rachel and Leah. The roots of it are Rachel and Leah. Yaakov Avinu, heavyweight champion of the world. Oh, I'm sorry. But is he? What happens? Right? He comes down, last week's Parsha, yesterday's Parsha. He comes, he shows up, and suddenly he's knocking off huge boulders that normally takes a whole bunch of shepherds to knock off. Comes Yaakov and knocks it off like a Mavir es hapekak me'al hatzalech. It's like knocking off a bottle cap. Not even a screw-on bottle cap. You know, like just the one that sits on top. You know, that was what it was. I mean, Yaakov, the Yoshev Oholim, the fellow who didn't even, you know, have like, didn't have hair growing out of his body like in a masculine way. Right? Yaakov Avinu, who is
white.
What?
Pasty white in yeshiva,
right? Just 14 years there, not sleeping, nothing. And Yaakov Avinu comes along, right? And he is the playground bully all of a sudden, right? Like what happens? What happens? So again, it's not the time to be marach right now. But it's very clear, as you read that parsha, that what happened was, Vahi kashero Yaakov es Rachel. Yaakov was transformed by Rachel coming. It's only one of many transformations that happens to Yaakov in that episode. There were transformations that happened by Rachel coming. As he meets Rachel, he suddenly, Yaakov, who is of another world, suddenly becomes filled with a love for Rachel. Now, one second. Remember, Yaakov was supposed to be the one who fixed the sin of the Eitz Hadas. Right? He was supposed to be like Adam before the sin, that, right, he's all head. Right? Like the Ramban said, Eitz Hadas Tevara was, before that, the person just did that which was true. He was all head. All head. But then the Eitz Hadas introduced, I mean, Ramban doesn't say it this way, but that's just pretty much introduced the loins, and now we end up with the heart issues. Yaakov is supposed to be no heart, right? All head. Ramban says, before the sin of Eitz Hadas, the person did something, no love, no hatred. They just did it because it was right, you know? Right? Machines, right? They did the right thing. Yaakov sees Rachel. And he loves her. He loves her. What happened? Rachel was the one who represented that connection to the physical world that matched up with Yaakov, was going to make for a refined, wonderful connection to the physical world. A lev tahar, a pure heart, right? Make for something very, very fantastic. Now, maybe some of it didn't end up happening exactly to completion with Yaakov and Rachel, with Yaakov himself, but it certainly did happen with his descendants from there, with Yosef HaTzadik. There, it happened. And there, indeed, that connection to some degree was going to be enhanced. Yaakov was not as interested in Leah. Right? Leah was more of the same. Leah, to some degree, was also this, you know, Ruchni, as opposed to Gashmi. And these, you know, elements of this can be found in other places. So Rachel represents this Malchus of Yosef, like this Malchus of Yosef, which is more the Lev, and Leah and Yaakov is more the Reish by itself. Yehuda is going to represent that part of it. Now, there's a pasuk which says like this: Arzor alatadik liyishrei leiv simcha. The light is sown for the righteous and for the yishrei leiv, for those of straight heart. There's simcha, there's joy. Right? Planting is not necessarily joyful. Hazayrim bedima. When you plant with tears. Right? That's what we say in Shiram, in the Shiram Alos that we say before Bench. You plant with tears. Or is a rule at tzaddik? A tzaddik plants. He plants the light. The yishrei lev, the straight heart, they have simcha. What's the difference between a tzaddik and yishrei lev? What's the difference between the two of them? So the difference between the two of them is the difference between Yosef and Yehuda. Yosef is called Yosef HaTzaddik. A tzaddik, like Yosef, is presented with a challenge. And it's a challenge. The wife of Potiphar was a temptation and a challenge for Yosef HaTzaddik. Don't think otherwise. There's an opinion in the Gemara that when he went home that day, when he went to the house that day, he went to be with her. And then he got the better of himself and he decided not to, which she didn't take to very kindly. Right? The Musti Yuknei Shalab, whatever it was, the image of Yaakov appeared before him, whatever it was. But Yosef struggled. I mean, the extent of his struggle, what he was struggling to hold himself back from being with her, Chazal described in very, very graphic terms. But he did. He withheld. Vayonos, he ran away. And the bottom line is, he didn't fail. He didn't sin. He struggled. He wasn't this objective, you know, perfect being that didn't struggle. But he didn't sin. And that's Orizaru Ala Tzaddik. The Tzaddik plants the light. It's hard to plant. You got to plow. You got to work hard. And you don't see anything for it yet right away immediately. That's one side. Yishrei Lev is something else. Yishrei Lev is the straight heart, which means no problem. The heart doesn't desire anything which is wrong. No struggle, no difficulty whatsoever. That's what Adam HaRishon is described as originally. Ho Elokim Asa Es HaAdam Yashar. Hashem made man Yashar, straight. Then he sought to make life complicated. Hema Bikshu Cheshbonos Rabim. He made life much more complicated. But man was originally made straight, clear. I didn't think of this yet, did I? So Chazal, so these two, now you'll say, that doesn't sound like Yehuda, right? Yehuda and Tamar, sounds like he was trying pretty hard, you know, to sin, and he was actually rather successful, right? And David, also, you know, he sinned with Bathsheba. But they did tshuva, right? The power of Yehuda, the power of David is to do tshuva. And in the tshuva of Yehuda and David, they really, really accomplished something to the extent that Chazal say that David said, V'libi cholal bekirbi. What does that mean? My heart is like cholal, it's like empty inside of me. Chazal say, by David HaMelech, it doesn't say levavi, like we say a lot, levavcha, which implies like a double heart. No, it said a single heart. Is the language of Chazal, I think it's in the Yerushalmi, is that David killed the Yetzer Hara. Right? Didn't start off with nothing. Right? Remember we talked about this once? Adam HaRishon, 930 years. David HaMelech got the rest. Adam David Moshiach, right? That's the completion. Is that David is the one who has the job of doing tshuva to bring Adam HaRishon back to where he was. So yeah, he wasn't. David wasn't made Yashar. Right? Adam was made yashar, and he messed up. David's job was to get him back to be yashar, to do tshuva, to fix it. Yosef wasn't going to fix it. Yosef was dealing with the existing reality, and he was controlling it. He was controlling it. He was fighting against that which was there, and he was controlling it. And this, by the way, is bringing us back to remember the details I told you. I'm telling you a detail that might not sound so relevant, but it is. Remember that story of Rechavam? So that was the mistake of Rechavam. Because Yehuda's objectivity. When you're objective, is there a struggle? No. Do you have to force yourself onto something else, objectivity? No. When you're subjective, you know, the two of them are struggling, so then, you know, that's the struggle between the head and the heart. But when you're in a place of detached objectivity, it's not a struggle. And that's the form of Yehuda. Yehuda, ata yoiducha achecha. Your brothers will acknowledge you. They will accept you. Yehuda is not supposed to govern by forcing, because in Yehuda's world, there is no forcing. There's acknowledgement. Yehuda is back to the original world of like Adam HaRishon in Gan Eden. Where, what does it say about Adam HaRishon in Gan Eden? Hashem put him in Gan Eden, right? When it describes Gan Eden, he put him in there to work it, to preserve it. He didn't have to conquer it. Right? Gan Eden was very, very clear. The world submitted to Adam as the top of the pile, as everything. And that's what Yehuda, the perfect kingdom, the Melech HaMashiach, that's what that represents. Where the world acknowledges. Where everything in the world is below and subject to the objective great king. In that world, there's no war of Gog Ummag. The war of Gog Ummag that the nations are going to struggle and fight. In the world of Yehuda, there's acknowledgement. But there's somebody whose job is to rule by force. And that's Yosef. Yosef ruled always by force. His brothers bowed down. He has a dream that his brothers bowed down to him. He tells it to his brothers. They said, over our dead bodies, or maybe over yours. We're going to see what's going to happen with your dreams. We're not accepting you as king. And when they did accept him as king, how did they end up accepting him as king? Starving. They went down there because they were hungry. Right? Even afterwards. Right? They said, oh, so magnificent, they could at least accept. No. Yosef, oh no, look what he can do to us. What's he going to do to us now that that our father's dead? Now he really has us. You know, the notion of accepting Yosef was not the tzura of his kingdom. It was not the tzura. It was not the form of his kingdom. And in Mitzrayim, what was the form of his kingdom? The Egyptians accepted Yosef. They said, what a wonderful, brilliant, insightful, God-inspired man this is. Let's have him as our king. Yes and no. Yes, that's what they said. But they said it after Yosef had it revealed to them that they were headed to you know where in a handbasket. That the land was going to be swallowed up by famine. Oh my gosh, we're stuck. Right? They accepted Yosef. He would be the best one to lead us through this. And as soon as the threat was over and it was possible, they forgot about Yosef. Egyptians, generally speaking, with the Jewish people, were not inspired. They were impressed by force. When they felt kulanu meisim, we're all going to die. So then they said, okay, we better listen to them. We better let them out of here. It's two models. And when Rechavam, the son of Shlomo HaMelech, assumed the throne, and the people came to him and they said, you know, we don't like this. We don't accept this. So he had two choices. One choice was to be Yehuda and to say, okay, fine, if you're not comfortable with this, we're going to ease up for a little while. And then they would have made him their king, Yoiducha Achecha. But instead he listened to his young whippersnapper advisors. Right? And he said, no, you guys, you ain't seen nothing yet. You better believe it. I'm going to tax you like there's no tomorrow. So he adopted somebody else's method, the methodology of a different king, of a different kingdom. And he lost it. He lost it to Yosef. If that's your mode of kingdom of rulership, then you lose it. Ideally, as the Maharal says, there's only one king. We always worry about having two kings, right? Ever since the Hashem created the sun and the moon, we've been worried about having two kings. You have the king, the head, and the heart. Obviously, when the head is complete, the heart isn't the king. The head is the king, right? But the heart, remember, it's between the necktie and the gartel, right? The heart is between the head and the loins. And when they're both competing, so then you have that sort of kingdom of the heart. Ultimately, the final king is the king of the head, is Yehuda. Yehuda Baraish. Yehuda Yala Baraish. And he's going to be one to do it. Yosef is there in the world of conflict, in the world of the Jews struggling with the nations like the soul struggles with the body. Yosef is like the creation of the first 6 days, where it describes Adam as being created after everything else, and he has to go out there and conquer it. V'chivshua. Right, there's a struggle. You have to be kaivesh your yetzer. You have to conquer your drives, your inclination. It's two different worlds. And that's the battle that Yosef has to fight. And in the end, he dies. Because there aren't going to be two kings. The ultimate king that's going to emerge from all of this is going to be Yosef. Is going to be Yehuda. So the battle of Gog Magog is fought by Yosef. The battle of Gog Magog is won by Yosef. But then Yosef passes from the scene. And with everything else quashed, we move from controlling our drive to the world of tshuva, to the world where the king is acknowledged, where the nations aren't agitating anymore against the Jewish people. That's the transformation that we're driving for. That's that transformation that we're looking for. That's the ultimate. That's the ultimate conquest. The ultimate place where it's supposed to be.
How is it won by Yosef?
He wins the battle, and he dies. Happens. Happened many times. Huh? He gets killed in the battle. But he was still the ultimate victor of the battle. And now, of course, you can understand, without arichus, that there are two pshatim in the Gemara. What's this hespit about, of the end of days? One opinion says it's over Mashiach ben Yosef that was killed. And the other opinion says it's over the Yetzer Hara that was killed. It's not night and day. It's the same thing. When the Yetzer Hara is killed, Yosef's role is finished. Yosef's role is B'chol of Afcha. Yehuda's role is B'chol Lipcha. Durashticha. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So we said that Yosef is the king that kind of deals with physicality and stuff. Yet if we see like all his actions in the world, like he was a tzaddik, he was always aloof over all the physicality, where Yehuda like necessarily involved himself with everything.
Again, Yehuda has to go through the process, right? Yehuda's the Adam Arishon who brought it down, got involved to his detriment. And his job is going to be tshuva, is going to be to fix it, to bring it around. So Yehuda did get involved, but then transformed. Tshuva is transformative, completely, completely transformative. Kvishas hayetzer is not transformative. Control of one's impulses is not transformative. It's operational, right? Sometimes you deal with somebody and they have a condition, and let's go and we're going to heal the condition, right? Yehuda represents healing the condition. Sometimes you say, we can't heal the condition, but let's learn how to manage it, how to live with it properly. That's the tzaddik. That's control of the Yetzer. Right? Yosef does not. Yosef controls. He fights. They're there. The nations are still there. They're still looming their strong head. That's very, very much the difference. It's very much the difference. So yeah, Yehuda's life in the beginning represents it. Just like, again, he's picking up where Adam left off. Very, very much in that world, but let's turn it around. turn around dramatically. Okay. Very good. Gotovach. We should be zeicha to see. Here of Yomeinu.